You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of July 4th, 2017, and episode number 320. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Yes, happy Independence Day, America. I think it was 241 years. That's a lot of candles. Just be safe out there. That's all I have to say. And don't worry, I'll have you guys out of here in time for fireworks and apple pie and finish your burgers, whatever else you got going on for this holiday day. You're on Tuesday. Kind of weird to have a holiday on a Tuesday. Extra long weekend for some of you guys. Some of us work some rough jobs that we have to work quite a bit, though. I had today off, so I can't complain. And this week, we got some weird stuff. I don't know what happened, but there's just a lot of weird stories. And I'm not going to get too carried away with too many of these. But we're going to talk about another witness confirms a prior sighting of the Chicago Phantom, also known as the Bat Humanoid Owlman, whatever you want to call it, out there in Chicago. We're going to talk about the return of Wessie, maybe, and move over Mulder. Here comes Rob Lowe. Yes, Rob Lowe. That's an interesting story that we'll talk about it. Texas UFO mystery quickly solved, and we'll talk about the total eclipse coming soon to a state near you. We're also going to talk about how Russia has ruined the night sky, and we'll talk about the MUFON sightings for June and the NASA story sputters that we've been talking about for a while, and two words I never thought I would mention here on the show, Alex Jones, or three words, I guess, in this particular order, Kids on Mars. Seriously. And we'll also have the book of the week. And we'll see what else happens tonight here on this Independence Day Paranormal News Insider. And before I get too started here, if you're joining us in the chat room, we have a new chat room there on the website. And you can always tune in live for any show here on WCJV at WCJVradio.com and click on the live tab right there in the middle of the top there. It says, listen, join chat now. It's pretty cool. It's going to take us a little time to get used to. And once we do, I'm going to be able to really change the dynamics of the show. If you want to listen live, you're going to be able to put a lot of stuff into it, a lot more photographs like we were able to do before, and potential to change the show a little bit. But we'll get into that a little bit later. But yeah, I don't want to keep you guys too long. So we're going to jump right in here. And this week's news is brought to you by the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science. IMHS is a premier online and distance learning university that offers high-quality doctorate and doctoral PhD metaphysics degrees that will enhance your life and career, even if your career is not in the metaphysics field. Metaphysics is the scientific study of consciousness, existence, and reality, and includes such topics as theoretical mathematics to quantum physics to cosmology and psychic phenomena. Metaphysical humanistic science, also called metaphysical humanism, is simply our term for the study of metaphysics focused on understanding and enhancing the human condition and all that it encompasses. For more information on the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. And I spent a little bit of time updating the events listing at ParanewsInsider.com. If you're interested in going to a paranormal conference convention this summer, highly recommend it. There's no two are the same. Some are packed beyond belief. Others, not so much. But it still gives you the opportunity to meet other people in your area, other investigators, other researchers, not only in the field that you're interested in, but possibly, potentially, other fields as well. So you can learn how the other investigators do things and hopefully be able to learn a thing or two, maybe teach somebody something else as well. And thanks to those that have submitted lately, the last couple of weeks, I've gotten a few submissions of a couple of events that I put up on the website, kind of waiting for some additional information for a couple more ones that I'll be posting up there shortly. And you can get a hold of me at insider@paranewsinsider.com or contact me through the contact page at paranewsinsider.com. Also available through Facebook, Twitter, however you need to get a hold of me to let me know. I'll be happy to get your event on this list. It's a pretty darn good list, too, I have to say. Toot my own horn there. But I think I've done an okay job. There's still some that I probably missed, and I don't really have a whole ton of time to research, to look up every single thing that's going on out there. So I do rely on you guys, the listeners, to help me out to make this list that much more better for everyone else out there. And speaking of you, the listener, I really want to thank anyone and everyone who's tuned into this show since day one, but even the last few weeks. I've kind of had some issues with my voice and my throat and coughing and hacking throughout the month of May, which showed up in my stats that I look at through Podbean and a couple of other things. But April, I also took a week off for a vacation, so I didn't expect the stats to be all that great. But the month of June, wow, some of the best numbers I've seen for the show. So I really, really appreciate it. And I'm not doing it just for numbers, but it tells me, it kind of gives me a little bit of confidence that what I'm doing is being heard and you guys want to continue to hear more stuff. So that keeps me going and keeps me wanting to provide you with the content that I do each and every week and spend that time doing the research and reading and reading and reading and continuing to bring you the best of the paranormal and anomalous news stories each and every week. And I don't know. So that's just kind of my way of gauging that. And one thing I do want to point out here about events, let me get back to that real quick, was I knew about this one, but I forgot to add it to the list. It's called HillCon 2017. And HillCon 2017 takes place at Hillview Manor in Newcastle, Pennsylvania on September 23rd. And I've been invited out there a couple of times. I just never had the time to get out there. Hopefully I can one of these days. It's a really interesting location. And of the diverse panel of speakers involved in HillCon 2017 is friend of the Paranormal News Insider and of WCJV, a friend of mine as well, Audrey Hamilton. Audrey will be speaking at the, on the UFO landing and creature sighting of Presque Isle State Park in Erie, Pennsylvania. A very interesting event that happened back in 1966. And in her bio on the website, it's kind of cool. She sent me the information about it and wondered why I didn't have it on the website. Again, I forgot about it. Just didn't get it on there. But I thanked her for that information. I got it on the site, but I was reading through her bio on the website as I updated the website. And I read what she put on there. It was kind of cool. It says, quote, Audrey has the honor of being the only guest to have ever been featured on the internet radio show Paranormal News Insider, hosted by Dr. Brian D. Parsons, unquote. I thought that was cool, and it is true, and she did a good job there, and I'm certain that she will do a fantastic job speaking at HillCon 2017, one of her biggest events there. So it should be pretty packed. I think it's going to be a very successful event, and I wish her very, very good luck there in September 23rd. I don't know what I'm doing that weekend. I don't know. Maybe I can make it out there. That would be great. July 28th through Sunday, July 30th in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, I will be out at the Kecksburg UFO Festival. It's going to be Oh my goodness, it's going to be so much fun. I can't even begin to tell you how much fun this place is. Friday, July 28th, everything, it doesn't open until 6 p.m. They're going to have half price on their burgers. Let me tell you, I mean, it's just a regular hamburger. I don't know why, but they're fantastic. I look forward to the food. Fresh cut French fries, plain hot dogs. I'm a plain kind of guy. I like the hot dogs too, but the hamburgers, they are legendary. There's going to be live music from 6 o'clock to 9 p.m. All the vendors are going to be there. I'll be there. UFO people, Bigfoot people, probably some ghost people as well. A lot of crafts, woodworking, jewelry, all those kind of things. The Kecksburg Volunteer Fire Department will be selling stuff. I bought a t-shirt there last year. Awesome stuff. And usually pretty packed out there on Friday night. I don't know why, but everybody heads out there. And outside there's food vendors. There's going to be wood carvers, blacksmiths, all kinds of games. They're going to have the carnival stuff out there again this year. And a cornhole tournament. Get in that. That's going to be fun. I got to practice up. Now, Saturday is just an extension of this, essentially a city town, I guess. It's not really that big of a place, but nice town celebration. And the grounds will be open from noon to 11 p.m. There's going to be a parade at 2 o'clock, and you can enter in wearing your best UFO costume. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. And there's also going to be a lot of UFO floats, which is it's worth it. Last year, it kind of rained, so the parade was like they were going 45 miles an hour down the road. So really kind of hard to see that. I was talking to somebody and inside, so I didn't get to see that. But I'm going to be watching that this year. There's a bed race at 4 o'clock. You can enter in that. Smoke in the Valley Burnout Contest. That was super awesome last year. I had a lot of fun watching that. I spent probably way too much time and inhaled probably a good tire and a half worth of smoke. Great time. There's also going to be fireworks. I don't remember fireworks last year. Fireworks at 10 o'clock p.m. And Sunday is when the fun really begins, especially for those of us that are there for the UFO conference. There's a UFO hot dog eating competition. I don't know how that works. My goodness, I gotta get into that. UFO hot dog eating contest. I don't know. Maybe they're cigar-shaped. I don't know. The UFO conference starts at 1 o'clock p.m. at the EMS building. I will be speaking this year on the Foundation of UFO Research and Investigation. My first time speaking there. I was there last year just as a vendor. Stan Gordon is the headliner. He's going to be talking about some recent updates on UFO and Bigfoot cases in Pennsylvania. Also, Colin Schneider, also of WCJV here. He's on Monday nights on his show, the Crypto Kid Radio Show. He's going to be talking about Cryptozoology 101. And Ron Murphy, who has been featured here on the Book of the Week a few times, is also going to be speaking. Unexplained World of Chestnut Ridge, a hike through Western Pennsylvania's Goblin Universe. Quite the lineup. There's only four of us, but I'll tell you what, that's going to be pretty good. There's a lot of information. We're all pretty darn good researchers and investigators, so it's going to be a great lineup. It's going to be a fun weekend. Get out there if you can. Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, July 28th through July 30th. And I'll be back out there in Pennsylvania on August 5th in Johnstown, Pennsylvania for Strange Encounters of Pennsylvania. And August 19th, there's an update here on the Goose Project, the MS fundraiser that's taking place in Ohio, Central Ohio. It's now moved. It's no longer at Prospect Mansion. It's at the Bell Nursing Home in Kimbolton, Ohio. All that information is available on Facebook. Just look up Goose Project, and it should pop up there, and you can see if you want to get out there, see if you're interested in coming out there and listen to me speak. A lot of cool people will be out there as well. And as we get closer to that, we'll talk more about that in depth, who's going to be there and such and such and such. And been disconnected. That's interesting. There's little bugs here on the chat room. I guess you get kicked out if you're idle for 2 minutes. That's what I get for being idle. Let's jump into cryptid news. What do you say? Let's do that. Chicago Phantom, back in the news again this week. Shouldn't be a surprise. This has been going on pretty much since April. Pretty much every week. There was a little bit of a layover, 2 weeks where nothing happened, but it's back. The latest sighting was reported on Sunday, July 2nd, around 3 p.m. That'd be Chicago time, so I guess central time, local time, I guess. The actual sighting actually took place back on June 23rd at the Adler Planetarium. Well, that may sound familiar. Well, that's because the same location was also reported last week. A group of people were near the taco stand when they saw what they described as a giant bat that flew over them and flew into essentially toward inland toward the Chicago, and then suddenly turned and flew out back out over the lake. The witness described it as being 7 feet tall if it were standing up, and stated that it was about 20 feet away from them. The witness also stated that the creature made no noise as it flew, and that the group was so preoccupied with seeing the bat that they did not take a photo. So they kind of got a little carried away with that. And I can kind of understand that. It makes a little bit of sense. And weren't able to get a photo or video, of which they actually regret. Now, this makes the 20th report, according to Lon Strickler of Phantoms and Monsters, who has been diligent in collecting and following up with these reports for several months now. Strickler has also teased another sighting that he has received that he says has a, quote, unique caveat, unquote, to it. So that's interesting. And I'm looking forward to that one. I was hoping that it would be reported sometime today, but he's actually has to talk to the witness. And with being July 4th, I'm sure that's going to back that up a couple of days. But we'll definitely have that next week. See what is occurring with this ongoing story. And, you know, I've often wondered why I can't find any information in the local media. You'd think that the local media would be interested and we'd be talking about this. And he said via Facebook that he spoke to a Chicago reporter who said they are afraid to print anything about this story as the local media feels that it could cause a panic. And I guess that makes sense. You know, this giant 7 foot tall bat, could wreak some havoc in how people want to go outside and live their lives. And I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens next week. And that kind of ties me in with the book of the week. This book I've been, I don't want to say struggling to read, but struggling to find time to read. And finally sat down and finished this book. This is a fantastic book that ties into the subject matter. Obviously, that's why I'm talking about it after that particular story. And this book looks at flying humanoids. Obviously, that's what we just talked about. Now, many of the sightings in this particular book made the local media and didn't really seem to cause too much of a panic. But then again, none of the cities that I can recollect in this book were as large as Chicago. The book of the week, I was looking at the page number. Well, it's the book of the week is called Encounters with Flying Humanoids, and it's written by Ken Gerhard with a foreword by Dr. Carl Schuker, who is a very, very awesome researcher himself. Let's see. The book was published in 2013, and I am fortunate to have an autographed copy. And a little bit about Ken Gerhard. I'm sure you know who he is if you know anything about cryptozoology. He's the guy with the cool hat. A lot of cryptozoologists have cool hats. Ken Gerhard is a cryptozoologist and field researcher for the Center for Fortean Zoology and Gulf Coast Bigfoot Research Organization, as well as a fellow of the Pangea Institute and consultant for various paranormal groups. He has appeared on Monster Quest, The Real Wolfman, Legend Hunters, Paranatural, Ultimate Encounters, and William Shatner's Weird or What? He currently lectures and exhibits at events all across the United States. Although yet I've never bumped into him. He's been here in Ohio a number of times, but never been able to meet him in person. I think I've talked to him a couple times through Facebook or email or one of the two. This is a really interesting book. It's pretty thick. It's only 200, 220 pages, give or take. I don't know. It reads a lot heavier. It just seems like it's a much, much more involved. It just seemed like it took me quite a long time to read through this thing, but a lot of great information throughout. Yeah, I thought I had a link here to the cover, but I can't. There it is. Tons of information, tons of stories, and a lot of information tied throughout all over the world. This isn't just the United States. This is worldwide stuff. And I don't know if that's going to work or not. There's a link there in the chat room as well, underneath the cover of Encounters with Flying Humanoids, Mothman, Man-Birds, Gargoyles, and Other Winged Beasts is the second half of the title there. And this book does. This thing covers Mothman in pretty good detail. Ken has been involved in some investigation looking at the Mothman story. Also talks about the Jersey Devil, the Owlman of Cornwall, England, the Bat Squatch of Washington. And one thing that's kind of cool, too, is that it looks at flying humanoids in folklore towards the end of the book. And, you know, I thought it was a great book, just the stories and some of the information behind it. But I was reading through some of the Amazon reviews of this, and one thing did kind of jump out at me, and I wasn't really going to bring it up, but there's not really a whole lot of resources or references to some of these stories. So it kind of makes you wonder how much of this information is just speculation, or was this stuff really in newspapers or whatever. But a lot of these stories I've read over and over throughout studying and researching cryptozoology. So for me, I know that the information is out there. You just have to look for it. And he does offer a nice bibliography, a nice about 4 or 5 pages of books there at the end that tie into what he's written and that can support the information within this book. And there's a little bit of speculation and wonder, but the guy does this stuff. He's a cryptozoologist. He experiences all this stuff. He researches it. So he does give his kind of take on everything. Which is interesting to see, because he does research on these titles. So it's just weird too, because you know we're dealing with this latest incident here in Chicago. Started out in 2011. Not much has happened since then. And all of a sudden here in 2017, another 15 sightings, and it's just crazy what's going on here. And you don't think too much of this, but as you read through this book, there is just a ton of winged humanoid sightings that have occurred throughout history, and really heavily through the 19th, 20th, and now the 21st century. So there's a lot more than just the Mothman stuff and the Jersey Devil stuff. There's a lot of sightings all over the world that have been happening. So it kind of puts a unique perspective on what's happening here in Chicago. So again, the book of the week this week is Encounters with Humanoids, Mothman, Man-Birds, Gargoyles, and Other Winged Beasts by Ken Gerhard, with the foreword by Dr. Carl P.N. Schuker. Great book, and probably be reading through that once again. I kind of read through a little fast, but lots of great information in there nonetheless. And we're going to stay in cryptozoology. Kind of an interesting week in cryptozoology. I got excited when I got a Google alert about Wessie. I haven't seen a Google alert about Wessie since the 1 year anniversary of his sighting. Didn't bother reporting that here on the show. But this week, he was mentioned again. 2016, Wessie was one of the top stories, and it was about a snake. The Penobscot python, as the snake was discovered near the Penobscot River in Westbrook, Maine, last June at the Riverbank Park. Man, the story, man, it went viral. It was huge. And again, it was one of the top stories of the paranormal, not just through, you know, my show, but a lot of other people as well. And it wasn't too many sightings, just a handful of sightings, as well as that mysterious find of the snake skin in the woods. That was kind of, I don't know, a little questionable, but it helped add to the story. And it had everybody wondering, well, where's Wesley? Put it on t-shirts and stuff too. Well, Wesley is more than likely succumbed to the cold weather that happened over the winter in the Northwest, but his memory is alive and well. Last Tuesday, June 27th, a large snake was discovered on the front porch of a home in Biddeford, Maine. Animal control came out to find a 6-foot, well, give or take, red-tailed boa constrictor, and the snake is named Sushi. And it's made its way back home as the owner came to pick it up later on in the day as they announced this via social media, which is the way anybody does anything anymore. And yes, that's right, Sushi was the name of the snake. And in case you're wondering, red-tailed boa constrictors are legal in the state of Maine, legal to own. So no harm, no foul, no really background on how the snake got out, but it happens. And it was cool to read about Biddeford. Biddeford, Maine is actually fairly close to Westbrook. And Biddeford, beautiful place. I've spent a lot of time there. I actually had spent the night there a few times growing up. Maine is just beautiful. If you can get out there this summer, get out there. It's a beautiful area, especially that area there, very close to Portland. And let's see, Rob Lowe. We'll talk about that. First, let me get this link. If you're interested in this little snaky story, I don't think it was that great of a big deal, but just thought something was going to talk about here. What happened? All right. Keeps kicking me out of here. There's a link there. It's kind of hard to read because it's green background. Anyway, you'll get that. So if you're in the chat room, you get access to the links to these stories as I talk about them. If not, if you're not there, then you're going to have to wait. You're going to have to wait. Wait a few days as I'll release all this stuff through social media throughout the week so you can keep up to date on these stories. And many times, it's not the same links you're going to get through other stories. I think that one there, that's the one that everyone else had, so that's not a great example. But sometimes I'll do a little bit more research, and some of these stories coming up here, there's a lot more information that you're going to be able to find through my links than you are just reading somebody else's story. So don't worry if you're not listening live in the chat room. You're still going to get access to all of this information. And I want to talk about this this Rob Lowe thing. You know, I wasn't sure about it when I first heard about it. You probably heard about this story. You're probably just as confused as I was until I really read about this. Rob Lowe, yes, the actor who played Soda Pop Curtis way back when on The Outsiders. That was 1983. Holy smokes. A long time ago. I was only 10 years old. He's kept his career at pretty much treading water since then. And he was recently in the news over a purported Bigfoot sighting. And Lowe, who is 53 years old, his sons Matthew, who is 23, and John Owen, who is 21, recently wrapped up filming a television show called The Lowe Files, a documentary-type show focusing on the family's search for supernatural things, such as going to haunted locations, looking for UFOs, or searching for Sasquatch. Well, Lowe was interviewed by Entertainment Weekly, and the article appeared online on June 27th, where Lowe explains the show as, quote, "If you put Anthony Bourdain in a blender with Scooby-Doo, you'd get the tone of the show," unquote. Lowe himself actually had the idea of doing this show, but had initially intended just filming it himself with his boys. But the idea was pitched, and a show was born. During the interview, Lowe was asked if the show made him more of a believer in paranormal phenomena. Well, his answer focused on poltergeists and how they captured some incredible footage. And he also went on to mention how he had an incredible encounter with the wood ape. Well, the wood ape is pretty much the Bigfoot of the Ozarks. And Lowe was asked to basically relive the moment. And he said, quote, "We're 100 miles from the nearest town. We spent 45 minutes on the most rugged, brutal mountain trails. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. There are a lot of serious former military men with loaded weapons. Then something starts approaching our camps that is defying their orders to stop and their warnings that they were armed," unquote. Well, he was asked if he was genuinely terrified during the incident, to which he replied, quote, genuinely terrified. I was lying on the ground thinking I was going to be killed, unquote. And that's the big quote that's been pushed around through social media and all of these stories, and this, which brought my attention to this as well. I'm going to interrupt the story, though, real quick, just to let you know that you're tuned in to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVRadio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we're talking about Rob Lowe. Yeah, Rob Lowe's new TV show. And the wood ape incident that he's had, it's really curious. I really want to see this. And, you know, it's hard to really get the gist of something that somebody describes that happened to them during filming of something, because once it appears on TV, it's edited, it's cut, the timing may be different, and it's going to be, I don't know, televisionized. It's going to be more entertaining than what it might have been. But this sounds like a really interesting thing that happened, and I can't wait to see it. But unfortunately, Lowe has stated that the Wood Ape episode is actually the part of the one-hour season finale. So we're going to have to wait. You have to wait. It kind of stinks. But I guess that's just the way it is. And I got to be honest, when I first heard the story, I thought it was just a ploy to get people to watch some ridiculous TV show that's probably going to get canceled halfway through the season. But I'll be honest with you, after reading about the show, and I don't have an opinion on Rob Lowe one way or the other. It's not like I like the guy. It's not like I hate the guy. I'm just kind of indifferent. But when I was really reading about this, and why, there's a promo too, which I'll give you the link to the promo. The show really intrigues me, and I honestly think I'm going to watch this. It sounds like an adventure with a father and sons. His wife, incidentally, didn't want anything to do with this because she didn't want to be outside and wasn't really into all this stuff. And I think it's kind of good because then it focuses on father and sons and how they spent 8 straight weekends looking for some answers about the paranormal. So the paranormal stories are going to definitely draw a crowd. It's going to draw me in. And it sounds as if they're from reading about this and reading how Rob says that they're going about this show. There's going to be a good balance between belief and skepticism. So this isn't going to be one of those over the top believer type TV shows where a lot of fiction is going to be involved. It sounds like they're just whatever happened. It wasn't completely scripted too far. And it's going to be quite a bit of little comedy, lots of laughter. And probably the majority of all this is going to be bonding between, again, Rob and his sons. So it's kind of like, I don't know, what's the name of that baseball movie? It's kind of like a baseball movie disguised. Guys want to go see this particular baseball movie, but they go there and they find out it's a chick flick. But this is kind of packaged as a paranormal show. But I think there's going to be a lot of the family bonding and stuff within it, and a lot more about Rob Lowe. And I don't know if they're going to talk about how he went back to the outsider's home or not. That was part of some of the story that was out there as well. But it actually sounds really, really interesting. And I'll probably talk about this a little bit more as we get closer. Now, if you are interested in watching this show, the Lowe Files premieres on August 2nd on A&E, which I think August 2nd is a Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken. And so that's going to be, I don't know how many episodes. I didn't look that up on Internet Movie Database, but probably maybe 12 or 13 shows. I don't know. Well, 8 weekends, so maybe 8 weeks. I don't know. We'll find out as we get closer to that show. So that sounds interesting. And that's your cryptid news for the week. And let me get, I'm going to put the YouTube thing in here. They did a little promo for this, the Lowe Files, a little background information into it on YouTube, and there is the YouTube video of that. It's kind of cool. They show some of the locations, lots of interesting places. They didn't really name them, but they kind of alluded to some of the stuff that was going on with some of these ghost sightings, and they purportedly look for this UFO base off the coast of California. So that seems really interesting. And again, looking forward to that TV show. UFO news. Last Wednesday, a video captured an interesting UFO sighting in the skies over Plano, Texas. The Twitter video was uploaded by a Frisco, Texas resident, Hunter J. Gombach, which shows two unidentified flying objects in the sky, kind of bright little things. And all of a sudden, a third one appears. And as the camera follows one of the objects, you can see what appears to be fire following the object. The skeptical astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson actually commented on the tweet. Well, he was named in the tweet to ask. He was asked to help provide a solution. And he said, quote, "The universe brims with mysteries," unquote. Well, it didn't take too long for this mystery to unravel. And frankly, by the time I had read about this video, it had already been solved. But even by watching the video, I didn't know exactly what the explanation was. But watching it, I had a pretty good idea that I would come to the same conclusion as to what the story did come out to. And on the night of June 27th, when the video was filmed, the Texas League All-Star Game was taking place at Dr. Pepper Ballpark. And at the conclusion of the game, around 10:30, just as the video was recorded, the Patriot parachute team made a jump and was part of a pyrotechnic celebration. And the parachutists wore flares as they glided down to the stadium below. We've heard this before quite a few times, more than a few UFO videos over the years. Now, this happens quite a bit, usually late spring, early summer. Into late summer. And out west, I think, was it every January, February, they test military flares. So it's almost like clockwork that some of these explanations are going to pop up in particular areas. Now, a representative for the Patriot parachute team was interviewed over this story, and they said, quote, "That happens a lot. People think they see UFOs all the time with the pyrotechnic show," unquote. So we probably don't hear about every single time that this happens, but apparently probably almost every time these guys jumped, there's a local story, a local sighting of UFOs, and people get a little concerned about it. But it did look pretty interesting, and if you see these kind of things from a distance, they do look a little confusing unless you know what you're looking at and you're able to do the research to figure it out for yourself. And one thing I'm certain we're going to be hearing about UFO sightings is coming up next month. August 21st is the date, and the total eclipse of the sun that's going to be taking place a little after 1 p.m. Eastern time and last until just prior to 4 p.m. Eastern time. I haven't talked about this. I don't think I've mentioned this at all, but it's coming up, so I figured got to get you the listeners kind of aware of what's going to be happening in the skies. There's definitely going to be a lot of UFO reports surrounding this, whether unintentional, people just standing around looking, staring at the sky and seeing things, or probably some video or photographs of this happening and people thinking they see a UFO. It's probably a bird flying through the sky and they're going to just assume that it was a UFO kind of video things coming. Guarantee you that's going to happen. Where I live, and there's a website you can go to that kind of tells you what you're going to have percentage-wise. Now, where I live, I'm going to have about only an 82% coverage. And many parts of the United States, if you probably live in the area, probably already know about this, between 90 and 100% totality. And that's probably the area where I think a lot of the UFO sightings are going to occur. And a lot of them are probably just going to be created from other people's filming of this. And again, people probably see birds or airplanes or something else, or coronal discharge or something, and think that it's a UFO. It's going to happen. It happens every time. And what you didn't see when I said that was the air quotes I used when I said UFO sightings. Now, some of the bigger cities: Richmond, Oregon; Cape Girardeau, Missouri; Cleveland, Tennessee; Knoxville, Tennessee; Charleston, South Carolina. Those are some of the biggest cities in the totality zone. And I think I go on vacation a week prior to this, so I won't be able to travel I wish I was off that day. I would drive down to Tennessee. I'd love to see one of these. We saw, I think it was like 94% totality once when I was younger, and it was awesome, but it wasn't total. So if you have the opportunity to go, 82% sounds fantastic, but here in Ohio, I'm not going to be able to look directly at it. I'm not going to be able to really enjoy it to its ultimate. It's just going to look like a cloudy day. And if you really want to enjoy it, go down to where it's 100%. It's the chance of a lifetime to see the sky go from a nice, hopefully it's sunny. I mean, you could hopefully get a cloudless day would be perfect. To go from a beautiful, bright, sunny day to all of a sudden seeing the stars, the constellations, planets, everything just come into light right in the middle of the day, literally right in the middle of the day. There's no experience like it. And videos and photos will not do it justice if you ever have the chance. The other thing that really makes me want to go to do this was hearing that when this happens, you suddenly feel a cold breeze take effect. I would love that experience, just the whole visual and feeling the cold air. Just awesome. So if you get the opportunity, live in this area, get out there and see it. Enjoy it, because it's the next one's going to be a long way away. And let me get, skip the last link, but I'll throw this link in here, eclipse2017.org. If you go to that website, they've got a lot of great information on the eclipse coming up on August 21st. And enjoy that. It's going to be a pretty big event. And again, a lot of UFO stuff. Speaking of UFO sightings occurring from something, this is kind of a story I've been following off on the side and didn't think it was actually legitimate until a few days ago when I actually read the website. Yeah, the August 21st total eclipse is going to get a lot of media attention. And again, a lot of people are reporting UFOs. Websites are going to be profiting from fake videos. But there's another space issue happening in just 10 days. Yes, 10 days. The Russian Mayak satellite will launch from Kazakhstan on July 14th aboard a Soyuz rocket and will conduct experiments on how to slow down space junk and deorbit debris. That's a very noble experiment, something that we need to have a little bit more of, and it's great. But there's also a dark side to this satellite launch. Well, actually, a bright side. That's a bad thing. I guess dark side is just kind of a figure of speech here. But and it has to do with the two other objectives of this satellite. Now, the satellite is a CubeSat, which is a tiny satellite. You can buy these if you want to buy one. You just got to figure out how to get it up into space. And it's the size of a loaf of bread. It's actually a little bit bigger. The story says loaf of bread, but I think they're a little bit bigger than that. This thing is going to unfurl into a 170-square-foot pyramid-shaped solar reflector that's going to constantly tumble while in orbit. And the shell of the four-sided triangle is going to be created to reflect up to 95% of the sunlight that contacts it and will potentially become the brightest thing in our night sky after the sun and the moon. Now, other reports say that Venus is still going to hold on to the third brightest object in May. I see Venus every morning lately when I go to work. Very bright. But we're going to have to wait and see on just how bright this thing is. But it's part of the second objective, which is to collect new data about atmospheric density at high altitudes and use it to provide calculations of apparent magnitude of space objects and satellites. The third objective, this one is it's got some astronomers a little upset, since the brightness of the object is going to interfere with anyone's ability to actually view the night sky. Something this bright is, yes, going to have an effect, even if you live out in the country. It's going to be sky pollution. It's really kind of a bad thing, and a lot of astronomers are upset about this. It's going to interfere again with your ability to see the night sky. Terrestrial telescopes are going to be kind of at a disadvantage now whenever this thing is going by, as well as star software used in amateur telescopes. So this one little satellite is going to wreak a lot of havoc. But the third objective is nothing more than for Russia to prove that they were the first ones in space and remind anyone who looks up at the night sky that they will see the shining bright is their work, is their thing that's up there. And from the website and translated from Russian, the objective reads, quote, to show in practice that space has become closer and more accessible and the launch of the spacecraft can be implemented by friends and like-minded people, unquote. But it's also about bragging rights and the fact that they were there first. So make us go all blind. Mayak means lighthouse in Russian, which is probably what this thing will look like from the ground. It's going to be It's going to be spinning every second. A four-sided pyramid spinning in the sky, reflecting sunlight. So it's, you know, it's going to be sparkling, essentially. It's not going to be like the International Space Station that kind of just goes over and just reflects directly down, or satellites that just hit the sun and reflect down. This thing's going to be sparkling. It's going to be – it's just going to be annoying. I mean, it's going to be cool the first time you ever see this thing, but it's going to quickly lose its the excitement behind this. And, you know, it's kind of annoying to me that you don't hear much about this thing. This is a big deal. Because of the amount of UFO sightings that people don't know about this, when this thing is launched and when this thing unfurls and when people start seeing this, it's going to cause a little bit of panic, a little bit of misunderstanding, and probably eventually this is going to be a pretty big story, hopefully, that people start talking about this thing. If it works, if it actually is successful and launches and doesn't blow up or somebody blows it up or whatever happens. And it's important to note that this was not a government-based project. It's actually created from a crowdsourcing project supported by Moscow State University of Mechanical Engineering and headed by a group of young scientists named Your Sector of Space. The crowdsourcing project generated around $35,000, well, U.S. dollars, to fund the launching of the satellite. And this, again, is going to be likely the cause of many UFO reports globally for July. And it's going to make its way into conspiracy websites as well, more than likely. And speaking of UFOs, UFO reports, so you have the MUFON sighting statistics for the month of June. And once again, I was way off. And before I get too further ahead, I'm going to throw, I'm going to throw New York Post. Whoops. Not what I wanted to do. I'll throw this in the chat room real quick for you guys that are in the chat room that want to read about this thing. And maybe, boom. MUFON sighting statistics for June. Yeah, I was way off again. Looking at the month of May, I predicted 547 worldwide sightings and 359 United States sightings. And MUFON reported 642, so I was way under. And 470 U.S. sightings. So I was way under 2 months ago for the month of May, way under my prediction. Now for June, I kind of upped it a little bit. I predicted 685 worldwide sightings with 519 in the United States. So I kind of upped the ante, thinking that June was going to be a very productive month for UFO sightings, knowing that there was some rocket launches and stuff coming up, kind of was hopeful. And while I undershot the month of May, I way overshot the month of June. I just got to stay with my gut instinct, I think, with this. MUFON reported 590 worldwide sightings with 421 occurring in the United States. Of the 590 total reports, 54 came from Canada. United Kingdom had 47, a sharp drop off down to India with 8 reports. Australia had 7 reports. Brazil and Spain had 6 reports each. And Puerto Rico turned in 5. There were actually 26 other countries that turned in UFO reports to MUFON. in the month of June, with 18 of those only having one report each. Now, 590 reports are a drop-off from June of 2016, which saw 604 reports, and a major drop-off in the largest year of UFO sighting reports for MUFON's history in 2015, where June saw, again, a record 1,402 worldwide reports, with 1,180 occurring in the United States. Now, these incredible numbers were not due to real UFOs buzzing around Earth, but because of the popularity of the television show Hangar One, which brought a lot of attention to MUFON, and many historical reports were made during the year. Of the 421 U.S. reports put in June for this year, California was the number one state with 61 reports, as it should be because it's number one in population. New York was second with 25. Florida was third with 23, followed by Texas with 22. Arizona and Pennsylvania had 17 each. Illinois, Colorado, and Washington State had 14 reports each. Indiana, Michigan, and New Jersey turned in 13 reports. Missouri had 12, South Carolina 11, and Ohio and Nevada had 10 reports each. 34 more states, plus the District of Columbia, turned in reports, with 5 states and D.C. only turning in one report each. And I like to do the, sightings per capita, which is per 100,000 people. And we're getting fractions here because of the limited amount of sightings. It's not really enough to really be that impactful. And I've mentioned this pretty much every time I talk about this, that MUFON used to do this. But again, it's pretty insignificant. So it's percentages, but it kind of gives you a better picture of beyond just the numbers of what state had the most reports, but what state had the highest per capita. And in June, California being the number one state in population, also was the number one state with sightings with 61. You translate that out, that translates to a 0.157 sightings per capita. So that's 0.157 per 100,000 people. It's not even one person. Like, this is like somebody's from their elbow to their forearm, or their elbow to their wrist, I guess, not even their hand, of one person reported a sighting in California. Now, looking at the U.S. total, the average is 0.136. That's pretty low compared to some of the last few months. April was even lower at 0.107 U.S. New York was they're number four in total population. They had a 0.126 per capita with 25 sightings. South Dakota, which is the 46th most populous state, turned in a 0.234 with 2 sightings. Idaho is number 39 in population. They turned in 0.244 sightings per 100,000 people with their 4 sightings. Arizona, which is number 15 in population, turned in 0.252 with 17 sightings. Colorado, which is the 22nd state in population, turned in a 0.261 with their 14 sightings. Rhode Island, which is the 43rd most populous state, turned in a 0.284 with their 3 sightings. Vermont, which is 49th in population, turned in 0.319 with 2 sightings. West Virginia, which is the 38th most populous state, a 0.324 with 6 sightings. And this month's winner, I think, Nevada, which is 35th in population, had 10 sightings, and their per capita is 0.352, which is, again, less than half of a person per 100,000. So less than one person per 200,000 people in the state of Nevada turned in a report. And again, that's just turning in a report that month. It does not mean UFO sightings happened that month. It's just a report was turned into MUFON that particular month. It could have been from 1962. It could have been from 2016. It could have been from May of 2017. We don't know. It would be really hard to disseminate all of that information and bring that to you on the fourth of the month after all this stuff was put in. That would be like a full-time job just disseminating all that information. But it's interesting nonetheless to stand back and look at this information and kind of draw some very simple basic conclusions about what's going on. It's really not pointing toward any major event, especially when it's just month to month. But you can tell when something big happens because you see big swings in the per capita numbers. These are pretty tame, really. We've seen before August of 2016, I think is the number one that I've seen, where Vermont had a 1.12 per capita, so just slightly over one person per 100,000 reported a UFO sighting back in August. But there was only 7 reports. I think it was multiples. It was a meteor, I think it was back then. So my prediction, let me do prediction, and I'm not sure, I'm going to be honest with you. A lot of changes in MUFON coming from what I'm hearing. Not sure if they're going to still do this stuff. I don't know what they're going to change, what they're going to continue to do the same. MUFON's been a little bit of hot water lately, and I don't know. I kind of almost thought about not doing this anymore based on some of the statements made by MUFON leadership and kind of what's been going on, but I don't know. As long as I get the information, I'll still report it. And we'll just kind of have to feel out this situation as it moves forward, and the fallout continues through what occurred in MUFON. I think it was last month now. Well, yeah, last month. And my prediction for June, which I guess is no, I'm sorry, for July, I'm gonna go with 685. Worldwide sightings, and 519. Maybe I'll get a little closer this time. I've been way off the last 2 months. It's not like myself. And I want to thank Audrey Hamilton for the information for the MUFON sighting statistics for June 2017. And we're going to go to other news, and what a disappointment, major disappointment, in my opinion. I was all psyched up about this, did kind of like a live play-by-play on through Facebook, as I guess as live as you can, but it also went to my Twitter feed, about this rocket launch that was supposed to happen from NASA's Wallops base. This mission of the Terrier-improved Malamute-sounding rocket was actually launched. Nobody really cared because they got tired of, it being scrubbed at the last minute, time and time again. It was supposed to launch way back in the end of May, and it kept getting scrubbed throughout the month of June. And it was finally launched on June 29th at 4:30 a.m. I was up, I was going to work, but I couldn't watch because I had to go to work. Very little fanfare. Not too many people really cared at this point. And the creation of the clouds, it was also a little bit underwhelming. But at least it happened. I have a YouTube video here of it from a distance. Guy filmed it. It's kind of like time-lapse photography stuff. It's okay. I guess I don't know what I expected. But it's interesting. Anyway. And let's see, one last story. This is going to cause a little bit of controversy, but that's okay. I got to talk about this anyway. And it's a story I shouldn't have to clarify, but it's amazing that NASA actually had to step in to do so, or at least a representative from NASA. On the June 29th episode of the Alex Jones Show, Robert David Steele stated matter-of-factly, quote, "We actually believe that there is a colony on Mars that is populated by children who were kidnapped and sent into space on a 20-year ride so that once they got to Mars, they have no alternative but to be slaves on the Mars colony," unquote. Wait, what? Mars colony, 20-year ride, children kidnapped, and they're slaves. What? There's a lot of stuff there. A lot of stuff there. A lot of very heavy accusations. Now, the remark was made during a rant about the topic on children, child victims of sex crimes. But while the statement was completely baseless, many people took this as a grain of truth. I don't know how. I know there's plenty of people out there that do enjoy Alex Jones and faithfully follow the website InfoWars. But unfortunately, this is, just as this statement shows, much of what's said through this media is tainted with assumptions, baseless accusations, ridiculous conspiracy theories, which a lot of which are generated by listeners, and a glaring amount of misinformation designed merely to entertain those that check it out. Now, while NASA did not specifically comment on the comments, Guy Webster, a spokesman for Mars exploration at NASA, did state that there were no humans on Mars. I don't know why he's got to say that, but there's no colony and there's no kidnapped kids. Now, Mars is extremely cold, 81 degrees below zero. That's cold. That's beyond cold. That's cold on cold on cold. And the atmosphere is mostly carbon dioxide, and it would be virtually impossible for even a small band of humans to survive very long on Mars, let alone the trip to get there, due to radiation and the multitude of dangers of travel on a ship it would have to be a ship large enough to hold people and supplies. And the larger the ship, the more dangers you have, the more fuel it takes to get there. And speaking of getting there, 20 years? No, not even close. It actually only takes about 150 to 300 days to reach Mars from Earth, depending upon the speed of the launch, the distance between the planets at the time, and a lot of other factors, including, again, the weight of the spacecraft and all this. But it's not going to take 20 years. Wow. Again, I know a lot of people get their entertainment and support with their beliefs and conspiracy theories with Alex Jones and InfoWars. But please understand that much of what you hear is only for entertainment and to whip people into a frenzy of belief. And yeah, I mean, just an insane story. It's an insane accusation to say that kind of stuff. Just ridiculous, really, truly. And it just kind of, wow, that they would even put that on there. But see if this works. That didn't work. That didn't work enough. Oh, well. Well, shucks. That's not going to work. Kind of figure out this new chat room. It's really cool. It's really neat. Going to be able to share a lot of stuff, but I probably should have spent a lot more time playing with it before the show. But anyway, my little image toward the end of the show didn't work. But nonetheless, happy 4th of July. Thank you for tuning in. If you tuned in live, taking your time out on this holiday, midweek holiday day, beautiful day here in Ohio. Hopefully it's a beautiful day where you're at and you get to enjoy fireworks tonight with your family. Enjoy your freedom, because freedom isn't free. I'll see you next week, but for now, keep your eyes in the skies, especially tonight, for beautiful fireworks, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.